This is Spectrum.
Alternative Medicine, Homeopathy, Secret Society, Hypnosis, The Paranormal, Alternative Energy, UFO Abduction, The Weird, The Wild, and The Wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan here with my co-host Tom Theobanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Unless, of course, you have wisdom, in which case you don't need any more information. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. We have a guest this week. Through some trials and tribulations, we finally got a hold of Bill Chastain at the Apex Institute. So you have a bit of a intro for him. I'd be glad if you could read that.
Yes, I will. Bill Chastain was born in 1941 in a coal camp in Harlan County, Kentucky, but was raised in the Appalachian Mountains in southwestern Pennsylvania. Bill joined the Air Force, an environment in which he thrived, and was promoted right out of the basic training to become the youngest drill instructor in the Air Force. After the military, he took a job in an electronics factory, soon progressing to the research lab, then field project engineer, designing and building steel mills and power plants. His company offered him full scholarship to Pittsburgh University for engineer, but he turned it down. Bill left Pittsburgh for Olympia, Washington, where he managed a very large pulp and paper mill construction project. After Forest Products, he entered aerospace, taking a job as a facilities worker in a Boeing plant near Seattle. Soon he was managing projects, including the largest aircraft production facility in the world and the Boeing Japan offices in Tokyo. After 13 years, Bill retired from Boeing as a self-taught senior strategic analyst. After Boeing, Bill traveled the world as an international troubleshooter until 2006, when he returned to aerospace as a consultant with the Boeing company. While at Boeing, Bill began working with a medical discovery, later known as Apex. The first person exposed to Apex resolved their stage 3 cancer in 3 months. Word spread. Soon there were many cancer victims wanting to try this discovery. Bill and his wife, Amy, decided to give up aerospace consulting and devote full-time to Apex. That was almost 5 years ago.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Well, hi, Scott. Hi, Tom. Thank you for asking me to come on and talk to your audience. I look forward to it. Let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to start like the way I usually do, is getting a bit of history. A bit of history on how you got involved in the Apex Institute.
Apex Institute is based with accidental. A lot of the things, my background is aerospace. I'm a planner, strategic analyst, and I try to plan everything very carefully. Some things you can't plan for. I was doing an aerospace project at Boeing in Portland, and I had become aware of a product that we just kind of referred to as stuff that had been developed by fellow aerospace engineers as a water purification system for NASA. I had known about this for a few years, more out of curiosity than seriousness. I knew that they had some success in dealing with different diseases, that they had sent this solution out to various universities, including Providian West in Mexico, that did a very thorough test on a cancer patient with great results. I knew about these successes, but I didn't know much about the product. I didn't know much about the details. In aerospace, I deal a lot in data. I had no data, so it was just a curiosity. I discussed this with some of my associates at Boeing, and they'd mentioned that somebody that didn't work there but was a close friend had stage 3C lung cancer.
Ooh.
And yes. And they asked if I could help him, and I had no answer to that. All I could say is, well, let me meet him and talk to him, because I know nothing about this stuff. And we called it stuff. We still do refer to the early days as stuff. That's kind of just, it's not an inside joke. It's just, we do that out of respect, because at that time it had no real, it didn't have a name. we didn't know what to call it.
Right.
So they arranged for me to meet this gentleman named Jim M. Jim was stage 3 lung, very aggressive lung cancer. Had a grim prognosis. When I met him, his wife had to hold him up so I could talk to him. He looked like a concentration camp person. Very, very pale, very weak. And I talked to him, and I told him, we have no idea, Jim, what this will do, whether it will help you or won't help you. I'll see if I can get some if you're willing to try it. And he said, I've nothing to lose. Let's do it. It took him a week to decide to do that, just in case I had procured some of the stuff. And I gave him a minimal amount, had no idea how much he should use or what the effects would be on him, and he understood that. I said, I have no idea. Maybe your nose will fall off, maybe whatever. Well, he began taking it, and I lost contact with him for a month, a little over, and because he didn't, I had no day-to-day contact with him anyway. He called after 5 weeks, a little over 5 weeks, and he goes, Bill, he says, I'm doing fine. I said, who is this? He said, what's Jim? I didn't recognize his voice because he sounded so strong.
Right.
And I said, Jim, you sound really good. What's up? And he goes, well, he says, I just wanted to tell you, I feel great. My energy's up. I think I'm on the right path. And he said, I bought a brand new Harley-Davidson. And my mind is going in circles. Here is this person who had a very grim prognosis, and he just bought a new Harley-Davidson. And I go, Jim, I hope that's not a make-a-wish or last wish kind of thing. And we laughed. And he said, no, he says, I'm going to ride that SOB this summer. And I lost contact with him again, except he sent me an email that said that he took delivery of his Harley the day his doctor said he was going to die.
Okay.
Right.
Poetic justice.
It was. But see, that's the way he was feeling. He was feeling fine. So after 90 days, and I lost contact with him in between, after 90 days, he called, and he said, I'd like to meet. And he said, my oncologist is amazed. My female oncologist is confused. She's dumbfounded. She's never seen anything like this. She told me today that I'm completely resolved, that she can find no evidence of cancer anywhere in my body. My blood workup is perfect. My scans are perfect. The pictures, which he had taken every 30 days, the pictures that he got from the MRI didn't even show the radiation scars that had shown up. And that amazed the doctor because those were all gone also. So he said, I'd like to meet with you. And so we did. He said, bring some more stuff. And I did. And we met at Starbucks. He bought a cup of coffee. He rode that beautiful full-dress Harley. And it was nice. He's a little overweight. He's a little overweight. He's back to work at his job as a freight dispatcher in Vancouver, Washington. And he bought a cup of coffee. And while we were there, he rolled up his sleeves and you know, I'm joking around. And I said, Jim, yeah, okay, why do I want to look at your hairy arm? And he goes, well, you see the pink splotches? And I said, yes. He said, well, I've been off Apex for a little over a week and a half. And my psoriasis that had bothered me for 40 years has gone away, and I want to know if I can get more Apex because I want to wear my short sleeve vest when I ride my Harley this summer. So, of course, you know, we put him, you know, we gave him some to use for that. We don't talk about those issues like that, but to him, it seemed like it was almost as exciting to be able to wear a short sleeve vest as it was for him even to be able to ride his Harley. And
right.
So that was over four years ago.
Okay.
And I got a note from him a little over a month ago. He wants to get together and get some more Apex. This time, not so much, which we call it now, it's Apex. Not so much because of his psoriasis, but I guess when you have a condition as serious as his, you never, that feeling never goes away that the other shoe may drop. that right. it may come back.
Right. So as a preventive measure now.
Well, comfort. You know, it's like there are certain terms that we can't use, but quietly we just, you know, it's kind of like cancer soul food. But with him, he just takes a very minimal amount, which he did anyway to begin with, a very minimal amount. And so with Jim, the success he had,
right?
I said, okay, that's fine. I went back to aerospace. I love aerospace consulting. And so I went back working at the factory and, you know, yelling at people. And so that's an inside joke for consultants. The phone started to ring. It was Connie. Then it was Tom. Then it was Harry. Then it was John. All stage 4 cancers. All had been sent home, like Jim, to get their affairs in order. So you go through this thought process of, I'm saying, okay, I love my job. I like aerospace consulting. That's what I knew. It's what I know best. I retired from Boeing as a strategic analyst. And this is what I love. But the phone wouldn't stop ringing.
And this was all from word of mouth at this point.
Right. All friends of Jim's.
Right.
And an interesting anecdote. One of Jim's friends named Todd had exactly the same condition as Jim. Todd, I met with Todd's wife. She asked if she could have some of that stuff. It was just now being referred to as Apex. And she asked if she could have some, and I said yes. Todd's oncologist told him not to take it. He said, don't take that junk. That's bogus. That'll hurt you. And so he didn't. At Tom's funeral, or Todd's funeral, Connie, who is our second person on the program, Connie got her supply of Apex from Todd's widow at the funeral.
Because he was told not to take it.
He was told not to take it. And you can read whatever you want to into that. We say nothing about that. Because we don't know. Todd, maybe it would have helped Todd, maybe not. But it was kind of strange that Connie picked that, her beginning dosing or beginning bottles of Apex from Todd's widow. Connie was much worse off than Jim. Connie was with Providence System. She had had double radical breast 10 years ago. It came back with a vengeance. It got everywhere, got into her bones so badly that if she turned her head suddenly, her neck bones would break.
Wow.
So yes. So she was on all kinds of meds and all kinds of chemo, and her oncologist was freaking out because it was 10 years and she had no problems whatsoever. So she got bottles of Apex from Todd's widow, began taking them. We knew about that, but we didn't have a program then. All we had was stuff that we called Apex. And so she began taking that. I met with Connie. That was 4.5 years ago. She had less than 2 months. I met with Connie last week and got her resupplied. She's not completely improved. She's not completely finished with it because her body was so completely devastated. It's been a long process. But her markers are down, her pain is down, and she's living essentially a normal life and has been for over 4 years.
So yeah, then, I mean, even the fact of going from 2 months to live to still alive 4 years later and in improved health, that's a pretty big deal.
It is. And she was our second, what we later started calling our Get Your Affairs in Order gang. And those are very serious late-stage cancers that are sent home by the big-money cancer houses when they run out of options to treat them or the patient runs out of money. So they send them home to get their affairs in order. That's when we get them.
Right.
So our Get Your Affairs in Order gang, most of them are doing fine now, much to the embarrassment of these cancer houses. And they include CTCA, MD Anderson, Johns Hopkins, Sloan Kettering, Stanford, you name it, we've got to get your affairs in order, people, from those houses. Some of them, now we get, before they get to that stage, they're still on protocol, they're still on chemo, which in itself can cause trouble. But that's another story. We can cover that later.
Okay. Well, just to let everybody know, all the listeners, the website is www.apexuap.com. That's www.apexuap.com. And also, the other thing we should probably put out there, that Apex isn't a order it online treatment. It isn't something you can go to the website and collect $29.95, put in the basket, and have it delivered in a week. That's not what Apex is. Apex is a, well, I'll let you explain what it is if it's not that.
Well, when we started treating, not treating, we're not allowed to say that, when we started accepting people who volunteered to go on Apex, we had different conditions, different situations, but they all were pretty much devastated by the disease. The one thing that they needed was hope, which they don't have when they deal with an oncologist. And a lot of them just lose their will to live. They just want to give up. So it's important for us in the beginning to talk to everybody. And we talk to them as a friend, not as a medical doctor. I'm not a doctor. There is no medical person on the staff of Apex Institute. Apex Institute is a few people trying to do the right thing with what we feel is something that's very good. But there was a very serious deficit in the mindset of everybody we dealt with. My oncologist told me, I've got 2 weeks, I've got 2 months, I've got 6 months, I've got 3 months. And we have to try to work within that framework to reconstitute their warrior spirit, to get them back into the fight. And it's difficult. Oncologists are very powerful. Their words are very powerful. And we find that we have no axe to grind with oncologists. Most of them are very good people. They work within the framework that the FDA allows them to work within. And they're very limited in what they can do. They can't give somebody false hope, is what they call it. And when an oncologist mentioned false hope to me, I said, Doctor, what is false hope? Is that like false prayer? I don't understand what that is. And they do this because they can't tell a cancer patient that they're going to get better unless they know for certain they're going to get better. And so they don't, because they're not sure if any of their patients are going to get better in a lot of cases, except for some of the therapies, I mean, that they have for testicular cancer and some things, mouth cancer, that have a fairly good success rate. But other than that, they can't tell them, come back, see me 3 months, and you'll be fine. In fact, our study participants that are still seeing an oncologist, sometimes we just have to bite our tongue and say, what is going on? Mary called, and she goes, Bill, my oncologist insisted that I go on this med. It costs $3,000. Mary, what did it do for you? Well, nothing. It made me very sick. Oh, okay. Did he tell you that before? Well, no. Well, did he tell you? What did he tell you? He said, if I don't take this medicine, I'm going to die. And did you ask him that if you do take the medicine, are you going to live? And she said, no. I said, okay, why don't you just tell him you want your money back? Well, no, that's not going to work. So we have this whole arena of oncologists seeming to, and they're a very smart bunch of people, but sometimes it seems like they founder. One of our study participants said, my God, my oncologist won't stop playing chemo roulette. And
right.
they do things that it's Herceptin and Avastin and Avodart, depending on their condition. And we see the results of that, and then we see them sent home to get their affairs in order. And that's when we get them. Sometimes we get them before that.
Now, usually when they run out of money, right?
A lot of times. And people question me. We've been going through an inquisition with the State of Oregon Department of Justice because of our nonprofit status, which to the Secretary of State and corporates is fine. But somebody pulled the trigger and got them in our rice bowl about the nonprofit status. And the person that I talked to was, he's like, well, you're charging X number of dollars a month and da-da-da, and what do they get for this, and what are you selling them? It was so bizarre talking to him because he didn't have a clue what we were doing. And the people that we get, sometimes they are so devastated. By the time we get them, they are physically, emotionally, spiritually, financially ruined. I've had people that do a complete resolve on stage 4 cancer. One gentleman called and said, I'm done with my cancer, but I'm going to commit suicide. And you can't, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. And he said, when I had cancer, I was a cancer fighter. My family was with me. Now I don't, my family is gone. I've lost my job. I had to sell my house, my car, and I'm $350,000 in debt from medication. So I have no cancer. So what? So we deal with that all the time. And we were trying to, and still trying to organize what we call the Phoenix Project, which if somebody cares to come in and dump a ton of money into that, so we could have the best counselors to help people like this gentleman rebuild their life that's been totally destroyed. Work in two aspects. You work on their condition, but then you also work on their condition, their state of mind, their state of life that they've been forced into by their disease against their will. But we see this a lot. But our goal is to try to get to people earlier, which we're starting to get now. We're starting to get doctors around the U.S. who are putting, not just suggesting that their cancer patients talk to Apex, they're insisting on it. Because they, one doctor in New York has had over 6 months experience with 27 of his cancers. Everybody he has that has cancer, regardless of the stage, or the metastasis, he wants them to go on the Apex program. So we put them on, we accommodate them, and the numbers, we ask for what's called a pledge forward, which we can get into in a bit, of $195 a month, which covers a lot of our costs. For the first 4 years, almost, we supplied Apex free of charge to everybody.
Yeah, and just to be clear, you're at the end now of a five-year research project with Apex.
We're approaching the end of 5 years, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And for 4 years, we supplied free of charge in exchange for their medical records. The reason why we did this, like with Jim M. and Connie, our first two that were in the program, we knew that in order for anybody to believe what we were doing, here's an aerospace engineer born in a coal camp in Kentucky. What business does he have dealing with this, trying to help people with this issue? So we decided early on the only way people are going to believe what we're doing is to collect medical records, not anecdotal, not phone calls, not thank you letters, which we have a lot, and no testimonials. If you go onto the website, you'll see there's not one testimonial. All that we present are excerpts from medical records that have been generated by board-certified oncologists while treating people like Jim and like Connie and Tom and Joan and Harry and Harvey. And we get to medical records, the complete set, beginning to end, number 400 or 500 pages long. And when we get that, those medical records are evidence that's presentable in a court of law as legal evidence. So that's the only way we can validate what we're doing.
Right.
We don't generate the medical records. And in a lot of cases, the oncologist doesn't even know that their patient is on Apex until there's a dramatic unexplained change or some unexpected positive improvement. And at that time, we tell the study participant, now you can tell your oncologist. While they're scratching their head wondering what happened, now tell them so they don't think it's something they did and try to do more of it, which could be very dangerous.
Right.
So that's when that information goes to the oncologist. But up until that point, he's an oncologist treating his patient like he normally does. And when the anomalies pop up in the medical record of these amazing or outstanding or whatever word they use, changes in their patient that they've never seen before, they have to enter that information into the medical record. So we get those medical records from our study participant, who gets them from their oncologist, and that becomes part of our record.
Right. So that's so, go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Bill, can you explain what APEX stands for as well?
Yeah. Yes. It's an inside joke, kind of. It's an APEX isn't a joke, but we're not allowed to say anything about benefit or people get better or they get cured. My God, do not ever say the word cure. Improve, none of those words. We've had independent tests, and most recently we just had a fantastic analysis done by a world-famous scientist that tells us exactly how APEX works, why it works, and why we chose the right word for it. APEX, APEX, stands for antipathogen to the extreme.
Okay.
We couldn't even put that in print. The FDA would be on us, like, you know. So, but that's APEX. But also, it means the pinnacle, the top, the peak, and that's exactly what we feel APEX is. This is not the mojo juice, the juju berry stuff. This is, as the tests are beginning to tell us over and over again. And keep in mind that for years, just like many other things in the medical world, they know that they work, but they don't know exactly why they work. Sometimes it takes years for the analytical technology to catch up to the particular product or the particular medical solution before they fully understand it. They only recently have discovered, according to my information, that how general anesthesia works. For many, many years, they used it, and they didn't have a clue how it worked. Now they know. Because the diagnostics, the analytical equipment, the scientific equipment is so excellent now and so precise, they can tell what's happening at the cellular level. And so now they know how general anesthesia works. And APEX is the same way.
Okay.
We now know how it works.
So what do we know about what exactly is APEX?
APEX is... it's a solution that looks like water. You've seen it. It has a slight yellow color to it.
Yeah, I probably should mention to the listeners that Bill sent me a bottle of APEX 1 and APEX 2, and I had been on it, and my entire family had been on it for 3 weeks. And I did notice quite quickly a clarity of thought, extra energy. I mean, I don't have cancer, there's more benefits to APEX than just that. But, I mean, one of the things you do notice, and I found this myself, was more energy, the clarity of thought, that sort of thing.
That's common, the information that we get back from our study participants. That's a common report back. That's anecdotal because the doctor doesn't put that into their medical records.
Right,
but
right.
It's universal. What we always rely on are our study participants to feed us information. We don't generate any information at all. All we do is when somebody requests to go on the program, we send, and it has to be the individual or a very close relative, we send out the package and they call. We discuss based on, and our discussion is focused on what we've learned from other people. We know nothing. We're totally ignorant about APEX other than what other people tell us. what the study participants tell us, what doctors tell us, what the scientists tell us.
What do we know about APEX now? How it's what it's made of?
APEX, as we just recently found out, is pretty good stuff. I'll explain. We knew that APEX was made with silver nanoparticles, and we knew that the development, the original development, had a proprietary method of attaching large numbers of oxygen atoms to the silver nanoparticle. And that silver nanoparticle with the oxygen, when you take APEX, you mix a small amount of the solution into water, and you take that in the morning. It tastes like water, and it has no negative side effects. We're not allowed to say that either, but I've taken APEX every day for 4 years, twice the cancer dose. I wouldn't be without it. I like it. But it's a silver atom to which is affixed numerous oxygen atoms. We knew that, but we didn't know what it did when it entered the bloodstream. And recently, a very well-known scientist, famous scientist who works with the UN, works with the Japanese, consulting on Fukushima, a very well-known, well-established scientist who has done nanotechnology research and microbiology research. His field is astrophysics, but he delves in everything. He is kind of a universal scientist. He recently came into a supply of APEX for personal reasons, and he began taking it, and the first day that he took it, he called and is reporting kind of a blow-by-blow description of how he feels as it's going through his body. And he said, it's amazing. He's never felt anything like this. And these are his words. We don't use words like amazing, period. And the feeling that he got from it and the overall feeling of well-being and the positive feeling, the higher energy level, led him to, on his own, research what APEX was. We didn't ask him, and we didn't expect him to come up with anything, but he did. And what he came up with was kind of scary. Scary in a way that it is very, very powerful, much more powerful than what we've been led to believe. And I can only say that because these are the words of a world-famous scientist. And he goes into the technical details, which we don't need to cover, but he referred to the APEX particles initially as artificially intelligent hunter-killer nanobots. And I'm going, oh, that's cool. What is that? And so he was so excited when he's talking. He said, I'll call you back. I'll let you know. And he hung up. And he discovered that, and we'd seen pictures of APEX particles with live blood cells on a dark field microscope, where the little dots, and there's a picture of that on the internet, on the webpage,
as well as on your profile picture.
Yeah. That's the background of the profile picture. The circles are red blood cells, and the little dots with arrows are APEX hunter killer nanobots. They go throughout the entire blood serum and in and out of the blood cells. And they go in and out of other cells because they're very, very small. And what they do when they go into these blood cells or into the pathogen cells is, first off, their contact with the pathogen cells is inexorable. They can't avoid that contact. The scientists described how that is. It's a charge distribution imbalance, the laws of physics. It's kind of, if you could imagine, a pathogen is a north pole and APEX particle is a south pole. It's not that simple. But their attraction is just that inexorable. You cannot keep them apart. And when the apex particle, which technically we don't use in nanobot terminology, but we do use a scientific term that it is a silver oxygen nanocluster.
Okay.
A silver atom at the heart of a cluster of oxygen atoms. It carries that into the bloodstream, and when it encounters a pathogen, it goes into it, just like magnetism, which it is not, and don't be confused. It is a charge imbalance. It has nothing to do with magnetism. But to help the visual, whenever the apex nanocluster gets close to the pathogen, and yes, this scientist classifies cancer as a pathogen, and at that we'll lose a lot of oncologists and a lot of medical people because they've been taught to believe that there's 128 different diseases called cancer. We don't think that way. We think cancer is cancer. So he's talking about the cancer cells and the tumors not wanting to have oxygen. They try to avoid oxygen. And let's not get into this simple thing of all the internet foo-for-all of adding drinking hydrogen peroxide or Fells naphtha soap or whatever, trying to add oxygen to your blood doesn't work, okay? And there's very definitive research done on that by Harvard Medical that you cannot do that. You can't change the microenvironment of your blood, the pH. A lot of people think you can. It's a good thing you can't, because I've got so many friends into holistic and alternative meds that if they could change their pH from acidic to alkaline, they would die of overalkalinity because all they eat and drink is alkaline foods. So God's smarter than we are in that regard. So what apex nanoclusters do is they find the pathogen, and again, it doesn't matter if it's a virus or if it's bacteria or if it's cancer, and I'm not allowed to say that, but the truth is the truth, and this is scientific truth we're talking about here. Provable, repeatable, verifiable. The solid tumor cells, I'm going to read this, it's a little technical, so please bear with me. I hope you don't get a nosebleed with all this technical jargon.
Go ahead.
This is posted on the website, by the way, so you can read it at your leisure. Solid tumor cell colonies are hypoxic. Hypoxia is a condition describing the reduced availability of oxygen. This is a paradox considering the fact that in order to survive and proliferate, cancer tumors also require vascularization, which means a blood flow. As a disease progresses, cancer tumor colonies now do not wish to be oxidized. Too much oxygen spells death to cancer. This makes cancer tumor colonies and cancer cells themselves ideal targets for the apex nanocluster. Okay. So moving forward, the apex nanocluster goes into the pathogen, and now what happens is, keep in mind, the oxygen is bonded to the silver atom with a very weak valence, or very weak, whatever the technical term is. This occurs, okay, the oxygen is released once the nanocluster gets into the pathogen. This occurs when the binding electrons of the active oxygen atoms are more attracted to the pathogenic molecule electronic imbalance than they are to the positive nanosilver ion they surround and which acts as their dolly or their carrier. Suddenly, the oxygen-phobic pathogen, parenthesis cancer, in parenthesis, becomes superoxidized and ceases to be viable. It is as if a bomb has gone off.
Wow. That's how we do it.
Yes. Big wow. Okay. And what happens at that point is now the nanocluster has given up its oxygen, destroyed the pathogen. The pathogen can't avoid it. It can't dodge it. It can't mutate like it can with chemos or with antibiotics. It can't mutate. It has no chance to mutate that quickly. We're talking nanoseconds from the time they're in proximity until the pathogen is dead. So now the pathogen no longer needs that oxygen. So I'm assuming, I haven't been told, that, which is bad to assume anything, that the oxygen is now free to rebond to the silver atom and go on to the next pathogen.
Right.
We do know that the apex nanocluster When it leaves your body after a day, it doesn't accumulate. There's no way you can have any heavy metal accumulation or toxicity or the blue man stuff, whatever that fufurol is. It passes through your body, and when it comes out of your body, it's as powerful as when it went in. It does not diminish.
Right.
So all the time it's in your body, it's going to every nook and cranny, all of your blood, all of your capillaries, everything where there may be a pathogen. And people notice when they first start talking or taking Apex that their first bowel movement the next day, they have energy, they feel better, but their bowel movement is kind of what we refer to as interesting because it has a lot of junk in it. Not cleansing, we're not talking about the colonic stuff. We're talking the Apex goes in and kills the resident pathogens like the E. coli and those things that we harbor that's always with us. And that comes out of your body as kind of a very smelly residue. It does not affect good flora in your body because they still have their charge valence intact. They're not damaged like the pathogen cells, damaged cells, and they themselves are susceptible to the Apex nanoclusters. Okay?
Okay.
So that's how it works.
That's how it works.
It is, yes. And that bit of information right there could quite possibly be the most powerful document that's ever presented to the medical community.
Right. Tom, do you have any questions?
So Big Pharma right now, had you had any kind of reaction from any doctors that, you know, had a kind of a negative thing towards it?
I have to answer that yes and no. There's a certain level where we work. Oncologists, a lot of oncologists, including oncologists from the big houses, Johns Hopkins is one, are very familiar with what we do. They've had some of their patients that have done dramatic resolves, children, and they refer to Apex as stuff. So we kind of still call it stuff from time to time. But they won't, even though they'll witness that and they'll note it in a medical record of one of their patients, they won't pick up the phone and call us. Part of that has to do with the fact that they're not allowed to. The other is that they don't understand or they don't want to understand or they just don't quite get it. And that's fine because we don't care if they get it. But doctors generally have mostly their personal anecdotal interactions. An ovarian cancer going to a major cancer center in California was sent home to get her affairs in order. She got on the Apex program, and I do not have her medical records, so I have no data to support this, so this will have to remain anecdotal. She was sent home. They gave her a matter of months. She got an Apex protocol. And before they sent her home, she was talking to her oncologist, and she pulled out a bottle of Apex, and she said, "Doctor, I'm on this now. Is this okay?" He tried to grab the bottle and said, "Where did you get that crap? Let me know. I'll get your money back. Don't take that." So she wouldn't let him have the bottle. She went home. Several months later, she called. She said, "I feel great. I think I'm okay now." And I said, "Well, you have to go back to the hospital and to the cancer center and get a closeout MRI or a diagnostic so we can close your file." She went back, and they were amazed to see her. Great condition. She had taken up jogging again and her yoga, and she just looked great. And the same doctor was absolutely amazed. They did the scan. They did the blood workup. And he came back and he said, "You're fully resolved. There is no cancer anywhere in your body." And she kind of knew that. Well, she reached in her purse and she held up a bottle of Apex. And she said, "Doctor, remember when you asked me where I got this and not to take it, that it was bogus and where did I get it and you'd get my money back?" And she goes, it didn't cost me anything, but look at me now. And she said, oh, by the way, doctor, your chemo didn't work. Can I have my money back? And I thought, good on you. Good on you.
But aren't doctors supposed to give us whatever care that's necessary? And if this thing is working, why would they be so negative or, you know, reacting in such a way?
It's not their fault. I give them the benefit of the doubt. A person asked me one time, Bill, how can you tell, can you recommend a good oncologist? Which, of course, we never do. We don't comment on any other therapies or any other treatment, alternative, holistic, whatever. We don't. We can barely manage just to handle what we're doing. So how can I find a good oncologist? I'd never thought about that. So I went into the oncological journals, into their writings, into all of the stuff that they have that good oncologists go to and refer to. And what I found was shocking. They're time-based. Their treatments are time-based. There's nothing in her room that says, look at the horizon, and if you see a glow of something that looks good, get it and try it. They have their mantra of the meds that they're allowed to use, period. Most of them can't even be used off-label. They have to follow very strict protocol for using those treatments. And it says, how soon after you discovered this condition did you apply this therapy? So they're judging, they're grading each other on how fast they gave somebody this proven therapy after they discovered that they had this change in their condition. And as you go through their document, you can see, okay, I've tried this, I've tried this, and I tried this. And then when you get down to the bottom, I was totally stunned. I knew this. But when you see it in writing, it's a whole different level of understanding. How well did you give your patient the end-of-life chat? Do they understand that they are going to die? So after all of these things they do, that's down at the bottom.
Right.
So that's when we get them. So is it the oncologist's fault? Is it their fault that that's their game strategy? No, that's what they're given. Is it the FDA's fault that they don't have better tools in the oncological toolbox? No, they can only approve what pharmaceutical research gives them to approve. So it's a circle that is broken in so many ways. And if you go to the website and you look at how I don't attack, I use information from the big pharmaceutical companies to attack themselves, because they do that. They're like a dog biting their own tail. And Newsweek did a great article on why big pharmaceutical research companies aren't trying to find a cure. That's included on my website also. And you can click on the Newsweek link and get the whole story. So here we have the oncologists who are trying to do a job, and I give them the benefit of the doubt, but they're very restricted. If I walked into an oncologist and I said, Dr. Smith, this is what your patient needs, this is what you can give him, you'll be a hero, he'll be alive and well, I would probably be in jail the next day. So we have to be very careful how we do this. Now, we have doctors, as I mentioned, that insist on all of their cancer patients go on APEX protocol or APEX program. And we put them on, and they monitor their own patient. All we do is send a box.
Right.
And they monitor them. They make no money off of it. We make no money off of it. And they are pleased to see that these are mostly holistic, alternative, homeopathic, complementary good guys that are willing to look past the horizon. Okay.
But, you know, there are quite a few, you know, medical doctors with, you know, a medical degree that will delve into holistic areas as well. And
yes.
I would think that those individuals would be very much for something of this sort.
They are. And we have a number of doctors, as I mentioned, who have their patients on the program. We have doctors who complementary, holistic, alternative doctors who put themselves on APEX program because they have cancer. And some of them swear me to secrecy because they don't want their cancer patients to know that they can't treat themselves successfully. So nobody mentions that APEX is now part of their daily routine. But all I keep it throttled back, Tom. That's a very good question. Yeah. And we have to keep it throttled back because if we lose $5 on everything we do at 100, if we have 1,000, we're not going to gain any ground. So we have to be very careful how we structure what we're doing and how many people we can bring in, which again is a heartbreaker because 600,000 almost will die this year of cancer, and we don't think that's necessary. But when you think about the fact that we have very important people, VIPs, on protocol, we have rich and famous on protocol, we have movie stars on protocol, or on program, I'm not allowed to say protocol now, and they go through the program and they go through it successfully. And to be quite honest, not everybody makes it, and we don't want anybody to go away from this show thinking that this is a panacea. It's not. Some people respond better than other people. It's an individual thing based on their physiology. We don't fully understand it. We lose people, but we, you know, our percentage is very good, which we can't talk about that.
But I would think that if and not necessarily to solicit some of these doctors that are, you know, into complementary medicine as well, but, you know, there's an awful lot of them out there that can create one hell of a backup for you.
Well, Tom, you're making a very good point. I have to be clear that it's not numbers that we need. If going back to, say, the movie stars, let's say that a famous movie star is stage 4, which we've had, and now they're resolved. When they go on the program, we tell them, do not talk about this.
Okay, but I'm not even saying that any famous people. I'm talking about
doctors. No. Well, hang on. I'm covering this, okay? The last thing we need is for a movie star to go on Oprah and said, I was stage 4 cancer, and now I'm not, now I'm cured, call Bill.
Yeah.
So we can't take all the doctors that want to come into the program. We had a Dr. Schwartz made a great presentation to the Cancer Control Society last year in Los Angeles. And from that, we signed up a number of doctors based on Dr. Schwartz's recommendation after he had used APEX on a number of his people. And he is a person who practices in Malibu, in Los Angeles. The people that went to this seminar, the thousands of people that went there, many doctors were curious, can I do this? Can I do this? Can I get on protocol? Can I get my people on the program? We accepted three, would love to have accepted all of them, but we, without funding, we can't do that. Without having upfront funding that let us set up, we're not an institute like Providence Hospital or like the Mayo Clinic. We're a couple of people.
Yeah, but
and we can't handle that without the funding preceding that.
Yeah, but okay? if a doctor puts his patient on this kind of program, I would assume that the cost that we've been discussing earlier would be able to get covered, whether they do the forward idea or whatever other idea. But I would assume that, you know, it would be clearly understood to the patient that, you know, that's the way they has to be approached.
We went there. We walked through that door. And the doctor in New York who has 24 of his cancers on the program, of that 24, now you mentioned Pledge Forward. For years, as I said, we supplied it free of charge. And there was a point where my savings, my Boeing pension, my Social Security is running out. The most donations that we have, 1,000 here, 500 there, a couple hundred here. And we're very rapidly going downhill as far as financing. So the study participants themselves, when presented with this, said, why don't you do a pledge forward and say that you will provide Apex to me, John Smith, free of charge, but I will pledge $195 forward for Tom Jones. I'm free of charge. Tom Jones is not going to be added to your program until I commit that pledge forward that covers the cost for Tom Jones.
Yeah.
So the only problem is, all these things are great in theory. The only problem is the first person is destitute. They don't have 20 cents. They're filing bankruptcy. They sold their house. They have food, and they don't have $200 a month. So we say, okay, now you're pro bono. You're on for no charge. Try to see if you can get your friends and family, your church, to pony up $20, $30, whatever, to help with the program. And they try. But keep in mind that when we get people, they're done. They're finished. Everything is they're done with everything except breathing. Some of them have some money left. So we did the pledge forward. And right now, out of the 24 people in Dr. S's camp in New York, 24, 11 are no charge. Okay? So now you have, 13 who are paying some. Only 8 pay full. So we set this up as kind of a benevolent capitalism, if you will, although this is not a capitalist enterprise, where some pay, you have no pay, some pay more pay. Those who can pay, pay full. Those who can pay some, pay some. Some who can pay nothing, pay nothing. We will not turn anybody away if they don't have money, period. We don't care. We don't triage on their condition. We don't say, no, you can't join because you've only got 3 weeks. Goodbye. We don't care. We put them on protocol. Sometimes they pass before the box even gets to them. That's how bad they are. But we always give everybody an equal shot. If they don't have the money, then what are we going to do? Say, no, you can't do that. So in talking to your audience, they say, oh, wow, now we can get free cancer. No, you can't. Because we're very limited on how many people. We're at our maximum right now. We can't accept any more. That's why we don't encourage the doctors to bring us more. We could have 10,000 people on protocol based on or on program based on the information and the people that are interested in joining. Oh, that's an exaggeration. At least 1,000.
I'm sorry. If I come along and I bring 10 individuals that are able to afford the 195, forward situation, would they not be accepted?
Oh, absolutely, they would be accepted. Don't get me wrong. Don't play that game with me, okay?
Yeah.
And I want you to sit in my chair and listen closely to what I'm saying. It has nothing to do with money. What it has to do with is I have been given this task, or I've accepted this task as a humanitarian exercise to do whatever I can to help whoever I can help.
Right.
The people that work with me do the same thing. So don't go into that box of 10,000 people come and they all want to put $200 in. My God, now you got 200,000. No, it doesn't work that way. Because in the first place, when they show up, we're always behind the curve financially. So we have to move ahead of the curve. Somebody's got to come up and say, okay, I've got 1,000 people that I want you to help. Here's $200,000. And we would say, great. Now I can hire somebody to help do that. This is all done with two people now, Tom.
Right. All right, I understand.
Okay. So there's a point where you say, okay, give me – I had a chat with a money guy today, a lot of money people, and they just can't quite seem to get it together for whatever reason. But he goes, okay, if I give you $10 million, will that help you? I said, well, in the first place – I wouldn't know what to do with $10 million today. Give me money in $10,000, $20,000 chunks so we can add people and expand what we're doing so we can make sure that we've got everybody taken care of and hire the professionals that can do this. I'm not a professional. I need to get the best people in to do this to give our study participants the absolute best advantage they can. We're right. doing the best we can, but we're not medical professionals.
Right.
And they depend on their doctor to give the medical to provide the medical expertise. So somehow the connection has to be made of the money, the process, the business. I won't even call it a business or a clinic, the enterprise, or however you want to call it, the nonprofit.
The program.
All of that has to the program. All of that has to come together incrementally. I had a call from a doctor in Puerto Rico. Says, I have all Puerto Rico and all South America. I can get $300 a month from all of the people. They're all wealthy people. They will pay you, and your problems are over. And I just said, well, what about the people that don't have $300? And he goes, well, I'm not concerned about this. And I said, I am concerned about this. So somehow in your program, you have to build it in to where we can work with those people who have the same need but don't have the resources.
Right.
Never heard back from him.
Right, okay. I see,
All right, so it's not, if we wanted to commercialize this, we were told by a major pharmaceutical company who wanted to buy this years ago for a large chunk of money, and they were turned down. That's anecdotal. I have no evidence on that, but that's what I was told by one of the developers. That they said, you guys are really stupid. The value of what you're doing, I don't know if your audience realizes that there is a formula in the big pharmaceutical research world that every month that you can extend the life of a cancer victim, regardless of how miserable the person is for that life, is worth $20,000. That's
okay.
The formula, okay? So based on that, Jim M., 4 years times 12 months times $20,000, wow, we are wealthy. But you can't go there. And we do not intend to commercialize APEC. We intend to be able to supply it, but we don't want to be a big pharma. And people say, my God, man, you are stupid. You could be wealthy beyond your means. And it sounds hokey, but when I get a call from a mother of a four-year-old child who's not going to die because of APEC, that's wealthy. Okay? That, to me, is where the wealth is.
I agree. Right? And this is interesting because me and Tom have talked about this before. Other guests that we've had on our show, isn't it right, Tom? Like Michael Tellinger, Cremo, Klaus Donna, who's an upcoming guest. We've had other guests on the show that have done the same thing. They fund their own research. They fund all the lab work themselves. They'll go out and do what their regular job is to make enough money to fund more lab work, more research, to bring geologists out, to bring archaeologists out to do the digs and stuff. And it's all coming out of their own pocket. And Michael Tellinger just recently did a tour where he went around and gave a talk. And you know what's going to happen. Every penny of what he made, and he told us, he'll be going back to South Africa and hiring more lab work and hiring some archaeologists and geologists to come out to give them, because they won't do it for free.
No.
Right? And I mean, you know about this too, Tom.
For sure.
See, he's driven, we're driven. Aerospace, when I was doing aerospace, it was $200-$300 an hour, 40 hours a week, 4 weeks out of the month.
Right.
As long as I was able to do some of that, then we were fine. But then when the number of study participants grew to the point where I couldn't do both, I sat down with my lovely wife, Emmy, who's from Japan, and she said, you have no choice. Why are you even talking about a choice? And we go back to the book, The Little Prince. Once you touch it, you own it, and you have a moral imperative to carry it forward, period. So that's our mantra. And she's very much on board with the fact that we have a 13-year-old car, and your audience doesn't want to know this, but I want them to hear it because I get to whine a little bit.
Right.
We've
heard it before. You know the story, yeah.
I know. I got a 13-year-old car. I don't even have this and that. But we're very happy because we get the hallelujah phone calls. We get the information. We get the medical records. And we know that we're doing something that nobody else on God's green earth can do. And we will continue doing it until I either do the perp walk, whatever. But we will continue doing it because this is what we do. And when we get our study participants call and they try to make us into what we're not, try to make me into what I'm not, I'm just a messenger. This is not my stuff. This is, and we talk to the developers and we all call it God's stuff. Hokey? Yes. But when you talk to somebody like the scientist or his Chinese friend who had such a spiritual awakening just taking this stuff, you tend to go there. And it's okay. We don't like to dwell there because it's not that. It's a pure physiological reaction in your body. But when somebody is resolved and they call and they say, thank you, oh my God, I say quite clearly, go to church, thank God, that's where the thanks belong. And actually, I thank them because without the study participants in the program, we would have no program. So here these people are.
Or validation.
Exactly. And here these people are frightened, they're frustrated, they're vulnerable, they're broke, they're in pain. And they step up and take this product or this stuff they know nothing about. And so whatever happens, happens, and they call to thank me. And it's like, you're the hero. All of the study participants, all of our big family, of which we have 84 right now.
That's not the total, because over the five-year research program, you have 84 current, but you've tested, right. You've put hundreds, well, over 500 people on the program.
I would say more like 300.
Okay.
The reason I say that, we do have the 500 number, but some people fall off the database. They just go away. They get better and go away.
Okay.
Or they just go away.
Or they get better and forget and don't send you the medical records.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which is the main thing. Bill requests when people get on the program, you need to send Bill your medical records from your oncologist proving you have cancer and so that you can get into the program. If you send Bill a note that says you have acne, more than likely you're not going to get on the protocol because this is for research purposes. Again, this is not the $29.95 buy it on the internet cure all.
You have to have
it's a program,
right? You have to have proof that you have cancer, or whoever you want to get on the program has cancer. And the only way to do that is a valid medical record from an oncologist. And no, don't send us the records now, because we get a package as we progress. We say, okay, now is the time, go to your oncologist, you own your medical records, say, I want my medical records, and I'm going to send them to Bill Chastain in Portland. And sometimes these medical records are 500 pages. Right. I've got one from Johns Hopkins for a four-year-old child that is 450 pages. 4 years old, and he's got 450 pages of medical records.
What was his story? Now, you do have I hate to say, stuff like success stories but
stories. Let me help you out, and I hate to step on you, but let me help you out with that, Scott. We have records. We have medical records. That's all that we talk about. Of all the people that we don't have the medical records, I just call them, they're invisible. Because we can't put them in our database.
Yeah, they're participants,
We can't even say that we worked with them, because I have no evidence that they were ever on protocol or ever on the program. So we have all the greatest, greatest Reader's Digest stories. Excuse me, Reader's Digest. You'd never, I don't think you would ever stumble across anything this exhilarating. But we have little Nicholas, 4 years old, who is from Ghana. His mother's a delightful, delightful woman. I didn't know, never knew for sure, but I think that they're here in some diplomatic mission. They're living in the D.C. area. And the mother called and asked if Nicholas could go on the program. And she explained Nicholas had been diagnosed by Johns Hopkins Pediatric Oncology there in Maryland. And she said it looked like he was shot with a cancer shotgun. His back of his brain and upper spine were just covered with little dots of cancer. Johns Hopkins had given him a 2% chance. And keep in mind during this discussion or during this dissertation, I'm not on Johns Hopkins' case, not at all. They do a great job within what they have to work with. So let's be very clear about that up front. When we put little Nicholas on protocol, he had a 1.5 to 2% chance in a couple of months. That was it. That he was a little over 2 years old then. And over time, I talked to his mother, whose name is Lenedra, delightful woman, who has as a signature on her email, it's kind of a pidgin English, and excuse me, no, I'm not being whatever you want to call it. I just love these people. I love her dearly because she's so delightful. But it's her signature on her email is, "It is okay to jump at the sun. You will not touch the sun, but your feet will get off the ground." And that's the kind of mother that Nicholas has.
That's brilliant.
Yes. And so she is so sweet, like so many of our people. You just say, you know, we want this to work so badly, and we don't know, because we never know. We know most people benefit. I'm not allowed to say that, but not everybody makes it. That's just the way it is. But little Nicholas was so special. I have a 4-year-old son, a little younger than Nicholas. Nicholas, I think, is 5 now. My son will be 5 in October, my son Hunter. They become very close friends, which is getting ahead of the story. But over time, Nicholas was going through all of this chemo and all this stuff. But he survived all of that. And he was on Apex all through these ordeals. And if he would go to the hospital, he would make sure his mother brought him his God juice, his God water, and they would put it in a water bottle so the doctors wouldn't take it away from them. And after a period of time, it took him a little longer than most, but the last phone call that I got from Lenedra, I told my son, I said, I'm going to call Nicholas. Do you want to talk to Nicholas? Yes, I do. So Lenedra answered the phone, and I said, "Lee, what's happening? It sounds like you're getting a remodeling done on your house." And she said, "No, it's Nicholas. He's running around kicking a soccer ball like a wild Indian." And she started crying, and she said, "The doctor called today, and Nicholas is fully resolved."
Ah.
And you just sit there, speechless.
Now, fully resolved means what?
You have different categories that oncologists use, and you've got remission, which has its own terminology. You have cancer-free, which is kind of an odd terminology because we've never really seen that. Resolved is an oncological term, which means they can find no evidence of cancer anywhere. No matter where they look, there's no evidence of cancer. And Nicholas was fully resolved, which means that he no longer had to come to see them at Johns Hopkins Pediatric Oncology. And we have an open invitation for us to go to the D.C. area and for Hunter and Nicholas to kick the soccer ball around the soccer field. How did Lenedra, why did she contact us? Was it just out of the blue? Did we stick flyers on windshields in Washington, D.C.? She heard about us through a woman named Diane.
Okay.
Diane is the mother of Adonica. Adonica was another child. Adonica is from Florida, Central Florida coast, East Coast, Boynton. She was under Johns Hopkins Pediatric Oncology starting when she was, I think, 14 or 15. She had an operable brain tumor. And at first it didn't bother her. And she resisted all efforts of Johns Hopkins for chemo, for radiation. And she told her mother, she said, I was born beautiful and I'm going to die beautiful. And I saw her picture. She's really quite a lovely girl. And so she refused any kind of treatment for a long time. But as she got older, the cancer was getting worse and worse and was starting to affect her seriously. So she agreed to have an operation. We had had her on Apex program for months before she had the operation. And they didn't get it all. They kind of knew going in that they wouldn't get it all. And again, it's not their fault. I'm not blaming them. They did the best they could with the tools they had.
Right.
So they gave the mother the grim news, and they said that Adonica is going to have to come back from radiation, for radiation. It's going to be pretty serious. Again, 1.5 to 2% chance of surviving, but if she does, she's going to be on a trach tube, and she will be an invalid. She'll be a non-functioning human being. Okay, so they told Diane, take Adonica home and let all the surgery scars heal up, come back at a certain point, and we will take her in the MRI room and put the X on her head to target the radiation. And the way they were talking, that X could have just as well been a cross.
Right.
And very grim. But by that time now, she'd been on Apex almost 2.5 months. That day when Adonica went in for that scan, her mother called me from the hospital, and she's screaming. She's crying, sobbing. And I said, Diane, wait, settle down. What's going on? Get a hold of yourself. And she kept saying, Adonica, it's gone. It's gone, Adonica. And I said, what? Something happened to Adonica. She said, no, all the effing cancer is gone. I'm stunned. And she's on her cell phone, and I could hear murmuring in the background. Every oncologist, every surgeon in Johns Hopkins in that hospital was in that room looking at those MRI pictures. Now, fast forward. Adonica not only was not an invalid, they never gave her radiation. There was nothing to give her radiation for. There was no evidence of cancer in her brain.
At that point, she was resolved.
At that point, she was resolved. Now, they never said that. They were very cautious. Fast forward, Adonica became a champion soccer player, graduated as a National Merit Scholar, went on to Duke University, graduated Duke University, and she's now in law school at Duke. Okay? And we all know, the oncologists at Johns Hopkins know. And again, I'm not faulting them, but do you think they would pick up the phone and call and say, hey, we're kind of curious. Come down, let's have a beer and talk about this. No, nothing. Even though the head oncologist in the pediatric department used words like amazed, never seen, never expected. And then he just kind of tried to slough it off as a spontaneous remission or placebo, which we know is absolute BS because it just doesn't happen. So there are two of our children, and we have a lot of those stories that, like Jim M, and you know, different ones. And we have on the flip side of the coin, we have those who are pretty much resolved, but the medical world won't leave them alone. There are certain chemos that, when applied at certain points, during their progress is not good. We've lost some wonderful, wonderful people to Avastin and to Herceptin. And we say that because they're the oncologist, Barbara from Canada, was in the Canadian system. And when we got her, she had a 12-centimeter colon, colorectal mass. She had 12 masses on her liver. They were going to go in and cut her liver in half, take out the bad part and have it rejuvenate itself and give her this operation and that operation. And they told her she had a 27% chance of coming off the operating table alive. Well, she'd been on Apex for a while, and her husband, finally, Andre, finally convinced the doctors in Montreal not to operate. And one of the reasons why he was able to do that was they couldn't find a colorectal tumor. It was gone. And they drug her around to four different hospitals until they got to the university hospital that had the most sophisticated enhanced MRI. And finally, the head oncologist, the head radiologist or whatever in that hospital said, "What don't you people understand? She has no more cancer."
Right.
But they wouldn't drop it.
Like, they wouldn't drop it. There's got to be cancer here somewhere. We said right. There was, therefore there must be.
One of the surgeons said something because he was upset because he didn't get to cut. Car mechanics like to work on cars. Surgeons like to cut. And he was upset because he couldn't cut. And he actually told her and her husband, he told her, even though they could find no cancer, he said, "Go home and live the rest of your life as best you can. I can give you no prognosis. We can't find any cancer, so I can tell you anything. I cannot tell you anything about your future. If I could find it, I could cut it out. I can't find it." And I'm going, what? How silly is that?
Right.
Not, he should be popping a champagne bottle, right? So she had to live with that. And those same doctors in the Canadian system, and again, I'm not picking on anybody. This is just the way they're taught to do things.
Right.
Gave her one of those, I will not say which one, gave her that particular chemo, and within 3 weeks, she was dead of liver hemorrhage. And her husband was so upset. I mean, we had brought her out of hospice. Her dream was to go to Barbados. And her husband was afraid she would not be well enough because she couldn't travel. And she got out of hospice. Her pain went away. She not only went back to work, she went to Barbados 3 times.
And oh,
They would call me whenever they got to Barbados. "Hi, this is Barb. Hi, this is Andre. We're in Barbados again." And I go, "Well, send me a ticket." but that was over four years, and finally she was done in by chemo. And I'm not saying that if they didn't do that, she would still be here, or if they did do that, that's not the point. The point is that sometimes they just don't want to leave...
well enough alone.
Yeah, they don't want to leave people alone because they're confused, they don't understand. The words that we like to hear from an oncologist is befuddled, confused, never seen before, amazing. They use these kind of words, sometimes even in a medical record. And when Tom asked about the doctors, on the website we have on the front page, which is kind of set up like a Reader's Digest format, there's one page that you link to that you can go to called The Truth, Invasion of the Truth Snatchers. That's a good read because we had the author of that book,
okay.
Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers, Ralph Blum, a delightful guy. He's famous for making the rune books famous. He has the Little Book of Runic Wisdom. He has runic interpretation, and his book and his rune tiles have come in a little bag with the book. Everybody in Hollywood was carrying one of Ralph's rune bags around, and they tossed the rune tiles to read their future or to read whatever. After 18 years of dealing with prostate cancer, he was working on his book, which he called, and this is his attitude about things, Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers.
Okay.
Because he's up in arms against the prostate oncologists who all they want to do is cut and paste. Okay? So he's going against them, and oddly enough, the co-author of his book is the world's leading oncologist, one of them, head of the Prostate Oncology Association of the world, and I will not use his name. You can read it on the website. He co-authored the book, and Ralph, the oncologist, would write, okay, this is what you're supposed to do, and this is the way you're supposed to do it. And then Ralph would write, screw you, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. And he did. So it's a good read for anybody that has that's facing cancer, Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers.
And was Apex mentioned in that book?
I'm getting to that. And it's kind of interesting because when Ralph went on Apex program, his prostate tumor was just coming back to life. It had been dormant for a long time. And it was coming back to life, and it caught the attention of both of his oncologists, both of them world famous. And they wanted to do all kinds of exceptional things, but Ralph wouldn't let them do that. So he goes on Apex program, and his first checkup, 30 days or so after being on the program, he goes into this world famous, and I don't use these words lightly, these guys are heavyweights, oncologist. And the oncologist tells Ralph, wait a minute, last time your tumor had a blood flow of 2.8 out of a possible high of 3. What's going on? There's no blood flow to your tumor. There is nothing. Zero. Zilch. Nada. And he was amazed. And Ralph told him, he said, well, I'm on this new program with this stuff called Apex. And the doctor said, I am absolutely astonished, and I will do anything I can to help these people at Apex get FDA approval. I will endorse anything I have to. I will work with them. Just let me know what I have to do. That was day one. 2 years later, when the book was published, and Ralph sent me this information about that oncologist because he had it in the book, the original copy.
Right.
And over 2 years, this astonishment, this amazement, all of these things that happened there with that oncologist were diluted by the editor, by the publisher, by his co-author, by all the people he interacted with, and they flat said, we will not put that kind of a comment in this book because we'll be liable, we'll be sued, we'll be this, we'll be that. And as the book was published, it had Apex in it, but not the rave reviews of the oncologist, the original oncologist. It was like, well, maybe it'll work. Maybe if you want to, you can try it. Well, I've got all of the dialogue and all of the communications, the excerpts from those over those 2 year period from the author. And when you read that, you can see how the flavor, how the excitement diminished. And then as the book was published, most of it was just gone. It was so watered down, it was meaningless.
Yeah, I remember I read that, and by the end of it, the final print version was, he was on this stuff. It may have had an effect. It probably didn't. You be the judge. Whatever.
Pass the biscuits. And you know, the thing about it is immediately after I read the book, I got a number of copies sent to me, but as soon as I read the book, I jumped on Amazon and I reviewed the book and I laid it out. I gave them 2 stars. Everybody else is giving 5 stars. It's a great book. It's a 5-star book. But it's a 2-star information source. And I put that Amazon review there in 2 stars. And I get more phone calls off of that. And they're going, did that really happen? I said, yes, it really happened. And here's how it happened. That's why I put it on the website, because I got so much response from the Amazon review of that book.
That's very interesting. Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. we can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's L-E-P-I-N-G-O, LapingoProducts.com.
But when we look at the reaction, and the original question that Tom had was a good one, and you've voiced this also, the doctors, the people would, you know, all of a sudden the world is going to wake up, and here's Apex and hallelujah. It just doesn't work that way. The reality of it is that it's a dogfight. From day one, it's a dogfight.
Okay.
And if you're a big pharmaceutical company that can do the PR and get somebody on 2020 to shill for you, to tell the world that this exciting new Cangius machine or this exciting new this or that is the answer to cancer, they forget the tagline is, send us all your money. It's going to only be another 10 years. We need another $20 billion, and we don't know if this is going to work for sure. We can't guarantee anything. No guarantees. What they always use is cautious optimism.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've been doing fundraisers for cancer research for decades now, and it just seems to be all the money is for research and nothing is for cure.
What they have, and I point this out from my aerospace background, project management standpoint, they have what's called a process focus instead of a product focus. They're focused on perpetuating the process because that's where the money is. If they did have a, quote, cure for cancer, unquote, the scenario is not as bright a business model as you might imagine. And as long as they, as I again include on the website, my comments about the failure, the abject failure of cancer research and why they failed, why their methodology doesn't work, why they couldn't even find aspirin today, let alone a cure for cancer. And I'm very clear on why their whole process is screwed up to the point that they couldn't find penicillin today, because they're not looking for the anomaly. They're not looking for the hallelujah moment, the eureka moment. They're looking for incremental changes in some genome reporting characteristics so they can extend their patent another 12 years and charge $30,000 for something that doesn't necessarily work. And Newsweek is very clear about that. And they come down on the side of the people with cancer, and they don't say this, but I say this. The only people that want to see something like Apex successful are the people with cancer. Nobody else does.
Right. Okay.
And, so Bill, and we do, yes.
Bill, what is the ultimate thing that our listeners can help, and what could they do?
The one thing I'd like for them to do is to go into the website. It's a little unwieldy. There's a lot of information there. And look at what we're doing. Try to get a feel for who we are. And there's a donate page, which never hurts, where they could donate any amount of money. But also there's a way that they can go on the enroll page and enroll somebody, enroll themselves in the program after they have an understanding of what we do. And also understand that we make no promises, but we will do everything in our power to go down that road with whoever comes into our program. We'll work with them as long as they need us.
You talk to everybody personally, every participant you contact personally, don't you?
They contact me.
Right, but you have a phone call with them.
Yes, and sometimes it's an hour and a half. And it depends. And again, I'm not a professional. I am just somebody they can talk to. They need somebody they can talk to. I never try to convince them to go on Apex. In some cases, it's kind of the opposite. And I'll tell them right in the beginning that, number one, I'm not a doctor. This is not medical advice and all of the things that are necessary. But also, it's important for them to understand that we're here as part of a big family. It sounds hokey, but so many people, I talk to dying people all day, all week, all month. They think they're dying. I know in most cases, I can't tell them this, but I know enough about the possibilities that whatever they are to be not encouraging, but to help them get back a little bit of their positive feeling, to get that warrior spirit back, which is so important for them.
Right.
Your body knows what you're thinking. Your cells hear what you say. They know your attitude. So trying to reestablish a positive attitude and do it in a non-professional way, you just kind of do it because you like the people you're talking to and they like you, and so you chat.
Right.
And they make a decision. And I'm very clear. I'm not here to promote. I will not encourage you. You have the website. Get any information you need. I'm here to answer any questions that you want to have answered. I will not recommend that you go on Apex program. I will not try to discourage you, but I won't try to encourage you either. That's your choice. Only you can make that choice. And what I will tell them is that whatever choice you make is the right choice for you.
Right. You actually have what I found interesting is when I did receive the box for the Apex in it, you have a bracelet in there that you send with all the boxes. I thought it was just me you sent it to because I'm cool. But you told me later that, no, you send that out with every box.
Yes, you are cool, Scott. Don't ever, let anybody tell you different, Tom. Where that came, everything that we do is a result of our study participants. Everything, okay? We put a little one-ounce cup in there now because we have people who can't measure out their daily regimen or whatever you want to call it. We can't call it dose because it looks like I'm playing doctor. Their daily amount, they can't measure it in a tablespoon because they can't hold a tablespoon steady. And they said, for God's sake, send me a little cup. And so we do. We send them a little one-ounce cup. I don't know if you got one. We were probably out. But yeah. The bracelet, it's a purple bracelet, a silicon bracelet, and it has written on it, never, ever give up. That's our mantra. And I got that, never, ever give up. That was one of Churchill's sayings, which I always loved. But more specifically, one of our study participants, from New York, a delightful person who is Russian and also Jewish, with great mannerisms and a very nice accent. And she read me a poem, first in Hebrew or Yiddish, I don't know the difference. I know there is a difference, don't get excited, but I don't know the difference. And then she translated it to English, and the last sentence of that very beautiful poem was, and you're commanded to never, ever, ever give up. And so we made that into the bracelet. And that's what we send out.
Yeah, it's the little extras that are interesting that shows that you're really on a pathway here to that's been placed before you and you're just walking down it.
We get guidance. And for those people in the audience who, I suspect that your audience is very, I know they're very intelligent, and I'm not doing a foo-for-all number. I know they're very intelligent, or they wouldn't listen to you. And I know they're seeking knowledge. They're looking for information. They're looking for something different. They're looking well beyond the known horizon to other things. So it's a natural audience for what we're talking about and for what we do. We know that from the beginning, When I started doing this, and my wife, who's very astute, said, you don't have a choice. And you can recall we talked about this a little while back. This is your moral imperative to take this forward. You can't turn your back on this. Okay, so we didn't. And we have these indicators that pop up that tell us we're doing the right thing. They're small indicators, and I won't go into that. But the people that show up on the phone or on the internet that have a particular service or a talent or advice or encouragement are usually pop up right when we need them the most, just like the scientist. And I want to get back to the scientist in a minute, but we look at this not as coincidence, but as providence. And no, we're not the chosen, we're not blessed, we're not anything special. But providentially, those indicators come to us to show us that we're on the right path, or perhaps we're not on the right path. And we respect providence, and we look forward to getting these indicators, and they come in a very timely manner. When you contacted me because of so-and-so and so-and-so, we weren't ready to do any media event, but after learning about you, who you are, Tom, the show, the audience, we thought, what a perfect match. And now's the time. Now that we're getting negative attention from the state of Oregon, right, and soon probably from other avenues, it's time. It's time to expand people's awareness of what we're doing. Not necessarily to expand the study participant base until we can coordinate the money with that. I'd love to open up the floodgates. My God, I would love to wake up and say, geez, I've got 500,000 people on protocol, and I'll dance and jig all the way across the floor to get my coffee. That's not there yet.
Nice.
But providentially, as I said, like the scientist, and as we get these indicators, they don't draw us, they push us in a direction. And I don't resist. You just get a feeling to know that this is the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, and so you do it. And the people that we have, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but when I get a phone call from somebody who's new, I get this really great warm feeling. And it's just kind of a matching, a meeting of spirits, of a oneness that we can communicate. And one of the things that, and my wife's noticed this, I tell her this, she said, you know, when you talk to people, it's so beautiful what you say and how you say it. And I say, it's not me talking. I open my mouth and words come out. Period. And sometimes I have no idea what to say next, or how to say something, or how to deal with that emotion that's coming across from them. But somehow it always manages to manifest itself into a positive, to where they hang up the phone and they know that they have a chance. And I don't tell them they have a chance.
Yeah.
I don't do that nonsense with them. But they know through my enthusiasm for them as a human being and for my unwillingness to let them give up, I won't let them give up. And every time we hang up the phone, I don't care if it's a professional football player I'm talking to, before we hang up the phone, I say, now, your job is to do what? You have to give yourself a big hug because you've earned it. And they have.
Right.
And if it's a family member, they get to go give them a big hug, or however it works out. I even had a lovely lady from England who was Iranian, architect, very nice lady. And she was in hospice when we got her. And we put her on protocol, and her doctor was just a very stiff shirt SOB. And he fought us tooth and nail. But then she managed to turn around. She got out of hospice. Fast forward, the last phone call I got from her, her name is Suha. The last phone call I got from Suha, she was in her garden. She had been in her hospice bed looking out at her wilting garden. Now she was in her estate garden planting new flowers, talking to me on her cell phone.
Oh, that's great.
Well, her doctor, I got to know him a little bit, and he was saying, what gives you the right to interfere with my... And I'm just saying, I'm trying not to interfere. I'm just, this is just something that she asked for. And as she progressed over time, the doctor was saying, well, she looks much better, her color, her blood work up, and I think we're on the right track. And I said, good, doctor. I said, when you hang up the phone, do me a favor. I'm not there, but will you go over, these are orders from America, go give Suha a big hug. And it is really quiet. And I said, doctor, excuse me, you guys do hug, right? Oh, yes, of course. I said, well, good, go give her a big hug. The next week, I got a phone call, and she's laughing. She cannot believe the doctor gave her a big hug. And I thought, okay. But that's part of the program. And no, it's not hokey. You need a hug right now. How many thousands of people, millions of people? I could use one.
I could use one, sure.
Yeah, and it's not hokey. I hate to overuse that word, but... it's just part of the essence of connecting.
Right.
Okay? And that's what we try to do. And that, aside from the Apex protocol, we just let it do its work. Whatever it's going to do, it does.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I found it interesting that I got your name and what you were doing from somebody else. And when I called you, Guy, I contacted you via email and then talked to you on Skype. And I said, hey, how would you feel about, you know, doing an interview? And you said, I will do an interview because you contacted me.
Yes.
You've never done an interview on Apex before. This is your coming out party in the alternative media. And you've never done one before. And you said, well, it's time. We'll talk. It's time to talk because you've done this through stages. You've had 5 years of research that you've been doing with participants, and now you figure, okay, I'm at the next stage now. I'll start coming out and talking about Apex. And you said, I'll do the interview, but only because you contacted me.
Yes, and only with you. And whatever happens in the future with the media, you will always have the first opportunity to do follow-ups and whatever goodness comes down.
The pike. That's great. Thank you.
Yes. Well, it's again, this is an indicator. The phone rings. Scott Jordan. Okay. And I was quite pleased that you did call. And now that we've gotten to this point, just a short time that we have been talking about doing this interview, several things have happened that have been of enormous import on your watch.
Yeah, that's true. I've been witness to a couple of events that were quite interesting. Tom, do you have any final questions? We're going to have to wrap it up. I should state, just at the end here, I should state the website again is www.apexuap.com, and you can, I'll have a link to that in the past guest sections tomorrow. It was in the upcoming guests. Now it'll be in the past guest tomorrow on www.spectrumradionetwork.com. And I'll make sure that I have any links to anything that's prevalent to... and we're trying to get a video. Also, Bill has a video of somebody speaking about Apex at a conference that we're trying to work that out. And I'll try to get that up
right.
as well.
But that was... let me interject. That was... Dr. Schwartz during the Cancer Control Society conference in Los Angeles. They're very good. It's a poor quality video, but it's got very good information. And now that you've given the website, aren't you curious why it's called apexuap.com?
I was going to ask you that.
There you go. Remember, Apex anti-pathogen to the extreme and a little up your bazook UAP, universal anti-pathogen. So that's that.
Universal antipathogen. Okay, I should have been able to figure that one
out.
But yeah.
But see, now for the FDA, anybody that's listening that's in a position of authority, you didn't hear that because it just really, really means apex youp. Okay, that's all.
Okay. So, Bill, do you have provisions for the future that when you are no longer able to, you know, be around to do this, is there provisions for it to, the programs to continue?
We have an in-depth structure. We have set it up in a way that not only can my wife and child know where they can go to be safe, and let's be real. If I believe in the scientific document that I was handed by the scientist, up until the time we got this information from a world-famous scientist who's well-respected, until we got this information about silver oxygen nanoclusters, we were basically going blind as far as exactly how it worked. It was kind of like if you're trying to build, and I hate to use this analogy, but if you're trying to build an atomic bomb and you don't have that last ingredient, nobody cares because you don't have the bomb. But when somebody hands you that last little bit of information or that last piece, now you have the bomb. Now you go from being a curiosity to being a potential threat. So with this information, do not misunderstand what I'm saying. This is very powerful information and makes us a target for anybody who doesn't want to see this come to fruition. And what we have learned over the last, what I've learned over the last almost 5 years is nobody wants Apex to be available except people with cancer or those who would hope to profit. So now when we say we have something that neutralizes or marginalizes or eliminates the need for cancer and infectious disease research, whose ears are going to perk up when they hear that? And how upset are they going to be with us stomping around in their rice bowl? So yes, we have an in-depth organization. We have a very secure compound to go to in the mountains. We have a very large number of people that when the bell rings, they mobilize. And I don't want to be adversarial about it, but we had a situation recently where somebody who supports what we're doing was warned off and said, do not do that ever again. Do not ever mention the word Apex ever again. And so they don't. They won't. So do not get confused. This is very serious business. Apex is very, very serious in what it does, and there are people that very seriously don't want to see Apex. I had one of the calls I had today from a gentleman who's an attorney, wants to help out, and he goes, I'm not going to talk to you until I get the secure phones, and I'll send you one, and we can talk on this encrypted phone. And he said, oh, incidentally, I think I'm coming into a lot of money. And that's going to be put into my will, so if anything happens to me, you'll still get it. That's how serious this is.
Right.
Well, sure. Well, let's hope that the audience out there will take it as serious as we have and try to help as much as possible.
Yeah,
but I don't want to leave on that negative note. This is happiness. This is joy and happiness, and this is possibilities. It has possibilities written all over it. And we need to energetically promote those possibilities and move forward without regard for those people who don't like what we do. We are going to do it, and the more support we have, the faster we can move forward. If we could have a cultural revolution internally or externally, people mobilizing and say, hey, FDA, help out here, do this, pay attention, congressman, senator, whoever. Once you get the information and you're convinced that we know what we're doing and you're convinced that this is a possibility, then now the onus is really not the onus, but it now becomes your moral imperative that you're aware of it, just like the little prince, to move forward and help see this through to its realization. So that's your assignment.
And I really like the fact that you have the pay it forward you're not paying for yourself to be enrolled in the program. You're paying for the next guy that comes along to be enrolled in the program. And I would expand that to, if you're into this sort of stuff, you could pay for the next two or the next five people to be enrolled in the program. I think it's a great idea. That's a good way to do it. A good way to generate funds, because right now, I know that you're operating at a loss, and right. That's something that just is part of the package. We've seen it many times before with people who are out there in the fringes doing things. They tend to work on that level. So hopefully, people will help out and donate and pay it forward. And
well, the mechanics, I didn't mean to step on your Scott, but you, on that subject, the mechanics of enrolling are on the enroll page on the website, and there is a dialog box you fill in and hit the transmit button, the send button, or submit. That goes into our database with your name, your address, and your phone number. That triggers you've contacted me, and that triggers a response to get you enrolled. Also, on the donate page, there is a PayPal. Everything we do is PayPal. We don't accept credit cards. That scares me. PayPal is very secure as far as I know. But on a donate page, you can go in and donate for somebody in any amount, $5, $10, $1 million. And you can put their name in, and then it goes in our records as that is part of the pay forward for that person or for the next person or somebody that you name. Or you could go to your church congregation and you can say, we know that Sally Smith needs some help, and maybe we can consider this, get the congregation together and pledge forward for her. So there's a lot of possibilities. But first, you, the audience, have to be convinced that we're on the right track. And hopefully we've done a good job of that, and the website will fill in some of the gaps. But if not, you can go on the website, contact us, and we'll do our best to get back to you as soon as possible. And maybe we can have one of those chats with you.
Yeah, and we'll have all that information on the website. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say we appreciate your time and for coming on. And hopefully, as everything progresses, that we'll be able to discuss it again in the near future.
Yeah, if any developments come up, we'll definitely get back in touch with you. Just as a closing anecdote, I'll say that during just a couple weeks ago, I was in contact with, when I was waiting for my Apex to arrive, I was in contact with Wade Frazier. And you know this story, Bill, because I contacted mm-hmm. you about this. Wade Frazier had mentioned to me that one of our previous guests, Dr. Brian O'Leary, was dying of cancer, and I was willing to send, my box of Apex when it come out to him. And Wade was saying, okay, well, he'll make sure that he gets enough money to cover Brian's Apex, and then somebody else was going to pay for the freight. And we were doing all of this, and then I contacted Bill and said, Bill said, yeah, sure, let's get him going. Let's get him in the program. And we were doing all that while the night that Brian was passing. And, of course, the next day we heard the news that he had passed on. And Wade said he figured what it was is we were experiencing like a psychic cry out. Like we were picking up on the fact that that it was coming to the end, and we just wanted to do something. We had this overwhelming right. need. And I'm sure you run into this a lot with people who are dying.
Yes.
Or friends of people or relatives of people who are dying, that frantic sort of I must do something energy. And that's what we were experiencing.
That's so common. One of the things, and I'll close out with this, I know we've been at this quite a while, is the people, almost everybody we get is they're frustrated, they're desperate, they're frightened, and we get the relatives very close to the time when they pass. And we're able to, if we can get it to them in time, we can make, as odd as it sounds, we can make their passing easier according to their relatives from people that we've had that experience with in the past. So, you know, it's like, wouldn't it be nice if we could just make this available to everybody? Wouldn't it be nice if we can get them before they got to that point, before they passed, before they even knew they had cancer? We'd love to have that kind of program going. And good luck with that, because as I said, this is a very large industry, and nobody really wants to see Apex available except those dear people like you just talked about, Scott. And those are the ones that are important. And the rest of it, nothing else matters except those wonderful people and the horrible journey that they've been forced to endure, the pain, the agony, the fear. And if we can be there in some small measure to get them through that, then it's worth always being broke. It's worth doing this. It's worth this. And nothing else, everything pales in comparison to that. And so.
Okay, we'll close with that. Okay. Everybody, just get a chance and check the website out. Check the Apex website out. There's a link to it in the past guest section. Tom, thanks for coming out. And we'll catch you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.